Okay, so tell me about what happened to you.
Well, last night around about 8 o'clock, I was at on Washington Avenue, I guess that is, at Magnolia Apartments, and walking down the side street on the other side of the street of Magnolia Apartments, and three cop cars come. And about six or seven of them hop out the car and tell my cousin and I, Eric, to get onto the car, to put our hands onto the car. And, we cooperated with the police, and they was harassing us. They searched us to see if we had anything on us. And we didn't have anything, no wallets, no ID, so they didn't know who we were. So they were harassing us, telling us that we was going to go to jail. And my cousin is asking for what? You know, we didn't do anything. You know, we confused on why we have to go to jail. And I apologize. I'm really like really a little bit uncomfortable. But anyway, They put my cousin and I in the car, and they're slamming my leg in the car to get in there, and slamming and kicking my leg. And I get in the car, and my family, they're running up to the police cars, and I know the policeman seen them. You know, they were pointing weapons at them, telling them that, you know, not to come any closer. So we get in the car, and we leave, and we go to the Greyhound station where they opened a I guess a correctional facility there. So they opened the correctional facility. So after I say about 5-10 minutes, we're in there, and they got us handcuffed, tightening them up, got us handcuffed. Got his handcuff and we're sitting in the chair, so they pull my cousin first and pull him into the to get processed. They fingerprinted him and took his picture, basically designing a criminal record for us, which we were clear of any criminal record until then. We're not bad people. We were just walking down the street. So anyway.
Did the police officers say anything when they arrested you?
As far as calling names and disrespecting and, you know, stupid son of a bitch and, you know, little racial comments.
Like what?
Everybody says nigger.
Are they mostly white police officers?
Mostly. There was one black male and one black female.
How many officers were there?
There was about seven total. Oh, seven total.
And the area where you were, would you say it was mostly black neighborhood?
Yeah. The area I was actually probably the heart of anything, you know, but it was like nothing was there anyway. Everything was abandoned.
And this is your first time in Louisiana?
Yeah.
Where are you from?
I'm from Syracuse, New York originally, but I'm out of Houston, Texas.
And what brought you to New Orleans?
To help my family move their stuff that they can save. Everything downstairs was destroyed. And we're just trying to get everything into the big truck and, you know, trying to head home. You know, I was over at the Magnolia Apartments because, you know, I basically wanted to see, you know, because I'm a great music fan. You know, I wanted to see where they made this video called the Magnolia Clap. And I just wanted to see where they had made that video. And
some of your family lives in New Orleans?
Yes.
Your parents?
Cousins.
Your cousins.
My cousins.
So you were helping them move out?
Correct.
And when did you arrive?
Where?
In New Orleans.
What time? Oh, we arrived at about 12:30. I'm guessing about 12:30 that evening. And I haven't been doing anything but hard work since.
What time were you arrested?
About 8:45.
8:45 p.m. And Did the police give any reason for arresting you?
They were saying trespassing, and they also tried to put another one under my belt, which was resisting arrest, which I wasn't resisting arrest, you know. They told me to put my hands on the car. And at the same time they telling me put my hands on the car, another officer is trying to put my hands behind my back. You know, so, I mean, I stayed confused, so I stayed at my position. And so he's like, what are you doing? You're going to go for resisting arrest, and, you know, I'm taking you to jail now.
But you were getting contradictory instructions from the police at the time.
They was very unorganized, to say better term, very unorganized.
And what happened when you were brought to the Greyhound station and processed?
Well, first, my cousin had went into the interrogation room, and he ended up getting beat up. They pulled a couple of, he has dreadlocks, they pulled a couple of dreads out of his hair and punched him and kicked him around. And the guy with a shotgun shot a pellet BB gun bag, it was bag full of pellets, and shot it at his leg, which now he has a bruise there. He also has a bruise on his back from the assault. And I say after that, I had came in, and they interrogated me. They just told me to basically what they was telling everybody else was to take their clothes off and such. I thought they was going to end up shooting me too, you know, because the guy had asked me, well, do you want to get shot? Do I need this with you? Do I need this with you? I just looked at him. I didn't say anything. I had nothing to say to the guy. And, it felt like I was getting treated like as if I killed somebody, you know.
And when you were arrested for trespassing, where were you standing? I mean, were you on the street? Were you...
I was standing on the other side of the apartments. On the other side. I wasn't even on the same sidewalk where the apartments was. I was across the street, on the same street, Washington Ave, in that corner where the park is located.
So on a public sidewalk?
Public sidewalk. And,
Now, we've heard a number of stories of people being arrested in a similar manner to you, just picked up on the street. And do you think there was any racial motivation on the part of the police?
What do you mean by that question?
That that they were profiling you as a black person?
Yeah, I felt that it was some type of hatred or something, as if they knew me from doing something to them before, and. I mean, like I say, it's my first time being in Louisiana, period. Not just New Orleans, but my first time in Louisiana. And my first time in Louisiana was a weird experience. You know, end up in jail, so a little weird.
So, you spent the night in the Greyhound then. What was that like?
Well, they had cages set up. And the cages were set up to where it was impossible to get out those cages. And they separated the males from the females. And, you know, they just left us there all night. They didn't give us any cots, any blankets, any pillows. And all they fed us until the morning was water. And even in the morning, it was about 10 o'clock and about 9 o'clock. Almost 9 o'clock when they fed us. It was a simple squared meal that true inmates should be eating. You know, that really is scum. They should be eating what we was eating. So,
were there any further incidents of violence after the booking process?
During
the night.
Yes, as far as the and being in the interrogation room when my cousin had got harassed, and you know, they just told me to strip search and. You know, I had to open my butthole. Basically, and then after that, we got shot at again while we was inside of the cages with the same pellets, and the pellets had, the pellet bag had bust open, and all the pellets, well, I was standing in the front, so most of them hit me, and
what led up to that?
I mean, I don't know. The guy just started going crazy. He started tripping.
The guard.
Right. The guard, I mean, the whole day, the whole time, ever since we've been in there, he looked like he was trigger happy. He just really had an urge to pull the trigger. You know, so he gets up, you motherfuckers, you fuck you this, you know, all, you know, cuss words and tripping and fires three rounds. So, then after that, I mean, we were already out of court by that time. And in court, I mean, they didn't even read us our rights. The police officers didn't even read us our rights when we got arrested. They didn't read us our right in court. And it was, and basically we had no rights.
Did you have any access to a lawyer?
No access to a lawyer, phone. You couldn't even take a, you couldn't even do a number two because there wasn't no toilet tissue. And it was hard.
What happened when you were brought into court?
We were brought into court. We were in order. You know, we were lined up. And basically the judge calls us. And there were anybody on our defense. It wasn't anybody on our defense. Everybody was pretty much against us that was in there.
So was there anyone who was supposed to be representing you?
Nope. No one there to represent us.
Were you told anything about how to plead?
Yeah, they said just to plead guilty and sign the guilty form, which is basically, I guess, the guilty form is to give up any rights to do anything against them. And if we sign the guilty form, then we'll be able to let out. We'll just have to pay a $300 fine and we'll be let out the same day. And after that, I mean, it was it's a little hard. They were real hard on us.
How did you decide to plead?
Well, my cousin and I decided to plead guilty because I had went to the side and asked him. I say, look, man, how are we gonna plead? Because it don't sound fair. He say, man, let's just plead guilty, man. I say, boy, I ain't guilty. He say, well, just plead guilty so we can get out of here. I say, all right. Ended up pleading guilty. And they fined us $300 to pay by the 21st.
Do you think this is just a way that the city and the police are using to intimidate people?
I think this is a way for the police to, or the city to get some money. So they can try to rebuild where when they don't have to. All they have to do is set up volunteer companies and, you know, and just asking. You know, I mean, I've seen on the news plenty of times people constantly donating. And they were just trying to get money. Because I heard off of every case, they wanted money. Another person had jail time and he had to pay money. Another person had $5,500 bail. And that was for public intoxication. And that was weird.
And when you were released, you were given a form just to pay this amount by a certain date?
Correct.
And you don't have to go back to court?
Yeah, I have to go to court to pay the $300.
You worried about coming back to Louisiana?
Oh, no. No. Don't plan on it.
Well, how does this make you feel about New Orleans and the New Orleans police?
Well, I don't like it. Honestly, I really don't like it. The way that they treated us was uncalled for. You know, the way that they handled themselves, the organization was none. Very disrespectful. mean, it was very hectic just to even get along with him, for him to cooperate. You know, and all the time we're cooperating with them. So, and that's the bean bag. I ended up getting one of them. Let me see that, Mike. Let me see that bag. This is the bag. This is one of the bags.
First of all, introduce yourself.
My name is Daniel Felix.
And when were you arrested?
Last Saturday night, which should have been about the 8th. Last Saturday night, I was walking down the street. Well, I thought it was 11:30 at night. I found out it was 15 after 12, and I was arrested. And I was brought down here to jail. I had to sleep on cement floor. Bathroom was filthy. And I asked several different officers, what was I being arrested for? No one knew. No one told me what I was arrested for. Up until now, and I've been out since Sunday morning, the day is Wednesday, no one told me what I was arrested for.
And have you had to go to court?
Well, this morning I'm supposed to go to court now. It's supposed to be for 9, they tell me now it's going to be for 10.
So they released you on Sunday morning, and did they give you some paperwork then?
Yes, they gave me papers to return to court.
I see. And when you were arrested, what happened?
Well, they just handcuffed me and they brought me to jail and searched me and everything and took my belongings and brought me in the back in a little kennel, I'll say a dog kennel, and sat asleep on the floor, you know, no running water, no nothing.
And you had to stay there all night?
All night.
Did they give you any food, water, or blanket?
They gave me a blanket and a MRI.
Made ready to eat meal.
Right, but you couldn't heat it, you know, and I don't think it was very good. I didn't even eat it because I didn't think it would be nourishing like that.
So what did the police officers say to you when they arrested you?
They asked me where I was going. I told them I was going down the street to get me some beer. They said the place wasn't nothing open. And get on up against the car and handcuff me.
My name is David Luke. I was arrested on Friday, August the 6th. The what?
26th.
Yeah, my name is David Luke. I was arrested on Friday, August the 26th. I did unofficial at a grocery store. I'd rather not, you know, disclose the name of that one yet. I was arrested at a grocery store. I do unofficial volunteer work with some of the homeless kids here in New Orleans. A lot of kids from the quarter, a lot of the street kids from the quarter used to come to my house and help me do renovations, and they would come to my house because they knew it was a safe place to get off the street, knew that they would have food, place to stay, that Friday afternoon, I gave one of the kids a ride to the grocery store, waited on the kid. He went inside the grocery store, and I waited maybe 20-30 minutes, and the kid didn't come out, so I went inside to see where the kid was, what was going on. And he said, you know, told me he couldn't find what he'd been looking for. And I said, well, come on, let's go. You know, there's things I need to do. And as we came out of the grocery store, the owner of the grocery store and a police officer followed us out of the store. And apparently the kid had shoplifted while we were inside the store, or before I got in. And so they started following us out of the store, and the kid threw down a $4 box of chicken salad and 2 plums and hauled butt. And I'm standing there, you know, like, I didn't do anything, you know, what's going on? And I was arrested. Didn't find out until 2 days later what my charges were, which were possession of stolen merchandise and theft of less than $10. That afternoon, I was taken to OPP. When I got to OPP, I was taken in. They took my cell phone and my wallet and put it in a brown property envelope. And then they started putting me through the identification process. The first process was where they took my picture, put the armband on me, got my name and information. The second process was medical. I went around to the medical unit, told them I was HIV positive, went through all that, the medical thing. Then I went to what they call the ID unit. When I was at the ID unit, the guy asked me for my picture ID, and I told him, well, the guy that patted me down kept my picture ID, and he also kept my cell phone. He said, well, you need to walk back around there, get your picture ID, get your wallet, and get your cell phone. And so this is it's about 15, 20 minutes after I'd been there. I walked back around there to get my wallet from him. The guy opened my property envelope. My cell phone was still there, but my wallet was missing. So that's the first thing that, you know, they took my wallet within 15, 20 minutes of me being there. So I was taken from there. I was put in an orange jumpsuit, and I was taken to the MOU, which is the Medical Observation Unit, letting them know, like I said, that I was HIV positive. One of the nurses commented that she didn't understand why they put me in the medical observation unit, because my T cells were so high, or my health was so good. But that's where I was placed, in the medical observation unit. She gave me some of my medicines, more of one kind than I needed and not enough of another kind. They put me in the cell. I had tried to make several phone calls from the holding tank downstairs, but for some reason it wouldn't dial out to Mississippi, which is where the numbers that I could remember of friends and family, and I couldn't remember any of the numbers locally. I had all those stored in my cell phone. So when they put me in the MOU unit, I went ahead and started trying to make phone calls out of there, but the phone was out of order out of that unit. So I was kind of depressed being in jail for a stupid reason that I was. Didn't even realize, honestly, that there was a hurricane on the way. I'm just, you know, not real big into watching the news or the weather. So I was there when the hurricane hit. The last I recall getting any food or water was that Sunday at noon. They did bring us food and something to drink. Sunday night the hurricane hit, or early Monday morning. Monday the water started coming in the cell. We were on the obviously the bottom floor. All day Monday we watched the water rise in the cell, sewage water, stench water. We got up on bunks and on top of tables to try to stay out of the water. Finally, sometimes the water had gotten up to our waist before finally, you know, we're sitting there tripping. We don't know if we're going to live or die. You know, we're in the middle of all this nasty water, total darkness, no lights, no water, or no lights, the dirty water. They took us finally around, I'm guessing it was 2 or 3 in the morning, Tuesday morning, they came and got us out of the cell. We had to wade out of the cell in waist-high water. They took us up to the third floor, which was obviously a basketball gym or some kind of gym area. They gave us some mats for some of us. There was probably about 20 to 25 of us. We laid on the floor, not knowing what was going on. When daylight came, they started coming to get us out, and they took us downstairs. We went downstairs, and we waded out of the building itself with water up to our chest. They put us on boats 5 at a time, and took us and put us on the Broad Street Bridge. that was the nightmare, because it was, I mean, all day Monday, we had not had any water or food. We were still hungry. No access to a bathroom. People were urinating in the corners, wherever they could. When they finally got us on the bridge, I would guess it was real early Tuesday morning. I'm guessing around 8 o'clock that they got us on the bridge, on the Broad Street Bridge. They kept putting people on there, kept shuffling us around. People were begging for water, begging for food, begging for a place to use the bathroom. I would guess that there was probably 400 or 500 of us on that bridge. We were on that bridge all day long, pretty much, until finally around 2:30, they started taking some of us and putting us on buses. One thing I do remember about being on that bridge, which in my mind I kept thinking, this is a nightmare. You know, I felt like I was in a movie or I was having a bad dream. I do remember one kid, a younger black kid, that had tried, obviously had tried to escape, or had got, obviously they said he had tried to escape, but he had gotten entangled in the razor wire. He come walking up the bridge, and he was bleeding all over his left shoulder, his left hip. The kid was in shock from loss of blood. And we're all sitting on the bridge. They would not let us stand up and help this kid. The kid could barely walk, and you know, up the bridge. And we were, some of us tried to stand up to help him, and they, you know, started pointing rifles and shotguns at us and telling us to sit down, told us not to move. And you know, we're just wanting to basically stand up and help this kid walk. And like I said, he looked like he was in shock from loss of blood and trying to get medical attention. And we all got pepper sprayed just for trying to help this kid. I had pulled off my shirt to cover my head from the sun to prevent my head from getting burned. So the pepper spray got all over my back. Not a very comfortable feeling. Anyway, that was one thing that really stuck out in my mind. But we finally, they started taking us and lining us up two by two and putting us put plastic straps, the zip straps or zip ties, and tied our arms together, you know, two people at a time. They put us on the bus. They drove us across the Broad Street Bridge until the exit, or until the entrance. Actually, it was an entrance ramp, I believe, but we got off the bus there. We waded through more water. We were right there close to the projects. I don't know the name of the projects, but they were to our right. Waded through water there, got on another bus, drove us less than maybe an eighth of a mile, put us on another bus, or vans, and they put us on vans. There were 16 of us in the van. Still strapped together, and we sat there from around 4 o'clock, around 2:30, 3 o'clock that afternoon, till probably about 7 o'clock before we actually started moving. Still no bathroom, no food, no water. And one thing I'll never forget is one of the deputies that was in the van. For each van, there was a driver and another deputy. There was one deputy that was in this van, and I hope I never see this man again, because he was just so, it was so cold the way he treated us. You know, we had been without food or water for, you know, 2-3 days, and here's this man with a little ice chest between the two seats with his Sprites, and his little peanut butter and cracker snacks that he was eating. And I asked him, I said, do you think you could spare 16 of those ice cubes? Because there were 16 of us on the van, you know, and I wasn't thinking about just myself. I was thinking about all of us. That's why I asked for 16. And he's like, no, I can't. And I just decided then not to say anything else. And one of the guys in the back of the van asked him why. He said, because that's 16 less ice cubes than I would have. I mean, you know, there was no reason for that, for the cruelty that, you know. But anyway, we sat there, like I said, probably a good 4 or 5 hours before we finally started moving. And we, I don't know how long we rode. I fell asleep, but I know that around midnight, 1 o'clock, we arrived at Hunt's correctional facility. I still have no idea exactly where Hunt's correctional facility is. I know we got off the vans. We went through the gate. As we went through the gate, there was deputies that took our name and our social security numbers, I believe. Every time I would identify myself, I would also identify myself as being HIV positive. But we went through the gate, we were checked in. Then we went through, they took us through another line. We got a bag, we finally got a little bit of food. We got a little brown paper bag with one pineapple ring and a bologna sandwich, I believe. And they had canopy tents set up out in the yard. And basically the canopy tents were, told us just to go sit up under the canopy tents, you know, and it's in the middle of the night. I'll never forget, we finally had, trustees from that prison come out bringing us water. It's okay. Then they had the trustees, the prisoners from there in the facility itself, bringing us water. And, you know, I felt like one of these, you see the video of soldiers in other countries, you know, when they're feeding or giving the kids food and water. I felt like one of those starving kids, you know, because we were begging for the water. They gave us a cup of water. Or gave us a cup, and it's like we just couldn't get enough water. I mean, prisoners were constantly begging for water. Finally got, you know, some water, and we laid down, still strapped to each other, and tried to sleep. that was on Tuesday night when we arrived there. I'm thinking it was sometimes Wednesday morning when they finally cut the straps that, you know, had us tied together. We did get decent food there. I will say that about Hunt's. There was a line, you know, to go through for medical attention, and I did tell the nurse there that I was HIV positive, and she's like, "I'm sorry, there's nothing I can do about it." So I'm thinking it was Thursday morning, finally, right after breakfast. They started moving some of us, and it's like they were hand-picking us. They put us in another yard. They finally got us on a bus that Thursday around noon, or another van. It was another van. And they took us to Bossier Parish, Louisiana. And that's where we were thinking, you know, we're finally going to get some decent food, decent water, a bed to sleep in, medical attention. And, you know, in a way, I kind of think that was probably the worst part of the whole ordeal, was getting to Bossier Parish. We got there, they gave us new clothes to wear, assigned us to cells and all this stuff, and started putting us in cells. And that was late Thursday night. So we got to Bossier Parish. And like I said, we were thinking that we were in a much better, we were going to be in a better situation. Got there, they assigned us to our cells and our cellmates. And, you know, we did get some hot food there, and we were thinking, you know, better food and everything else. But the food was child-sized portions, you know, just barely enough to keep us alive. We were kept on lockdown for the first 4 or 5 days that we were there. And of course, we're questioning, you know, why we're on lockdown, why won't they let us out in the little common area, no phone calls. We got there on a Thursday, and it was finally Sunday before I was able to make a phone call to my family in Mississippi, let them know I was alive, because they hadn't heard anything from me, you know, since the hurricane. And I think, I'm pretty sure, I'm not positive, but I'm thinking it was that following Sunday, that after we got there, or that Saturday night, they started, or it might have been a week after that, but they put us all in the line, and gave us vaccinations. There was a nurse, a so-called nurse, that was there that had been coming in and out, and apparently she was the only so-called medical person there. And you know, when you look at a person out, you're behind bars, and you're looking at a person from your cell doors, and you're telling her, "Ma'am, I have HIV. I need my meds." And she's going to look at you and tell you, "Oh yeah, so does everybody else." You know, how do you how can that person consider themselves a nurse? You know, that was one of the worst things. You know, is knowing that I needed my meds and wasn't getting them. Also, I had had a spot on my elbow, a little small sore on my elbow. And obviously, it got infected during going through the water, you know, walking through the water. It became infected. There was a streak going up underneath my arm, a red streak going under my arm, up almost to my armpit. And it was a Saturday night. I'm thinking it might have been that first Saturday night or the second Saturday night we were there. 2 o'clock in the morning, for some reason, you know, they drug us out of our beds and lined us all up, and I had been trying to get attention to the spot and to the streak that was going up my arm, and I called several deputies up there and told them, you know, look, there's a streak going up my arm, I have HIV, this can't be good for me, you know, I need to see a doctor. And the spot on my elbow was swelling. And finally, and you know, they kept saying, well, we'll tell medical. We'll let the medical know. But nobody ever came around, you know, never came to get me. So finally that Saturday night, they pulled us out of our cell. They lined us up, and they were giving us vaccinations and tetanus shots. And I made them look at my arm. And obviously they realized that, you know, they needed to get something done pretty quickly. So later on that morning, 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock in the morning, they came and got me, and they took me to Shreveport, to LSU, to the hospital there. But before I left, they put me in a bright orange suit, like I was, I'm trying to remember, I can't think of what you would call the suits, the
prisoner wear.
Well, no, it wasn't a prisoner wear. It was like a suit that I was like the suit you see everybody wearing now when they go in to do the cleanup. They wear the white
hazmat suit.
Yeah, the hazmat suit. Yeah, like I was a hazardous material. Yeah, but it was bright orange. You know, like I was contaminated. That's the word I'm looking for. Like it was a contamination suit. Made me put a mask on, just because I had HIV. I had to wear this all the way to Shreveport, about an hour and a half drive. I get out at the hospital, they sign me in, and I walk up to the triage nurse there at the emergency room. At the emergency room, and she asked me, I asked her, I said, "Can I pull this mask off my face?" And she said, "Yeah, why are you wearing it?" And I said, "Because obviously they think that they can catch HIV from breathing after me." And she's like, "Take the mask off your face." You know, she said, "This is ridiculous." So I took the mask off, and they took the orange suit off me, you know. Went in to see the doctor. And when I went in and started talking to the medical staff there at the hospital, I broke down mentally. I started crying. because I was actually starting to see television. I was starting to see some of the news reports there in the emergency room of the, you know, news footage of New Orleans. I'm worried sick about my house, you know, my dogs, which are left in my yard, you know. And I broke down mainly because they were talking to me like I was a human being, you know. It felt so weird, finally, to be talked to like a human being instead of like a, I don't know, like a murderer, like a hardened criminal. But they finally got to see a doctor.
Can you tell me what day is this since the storm?
This is probably 2 weeks after the storm, a week and a half, 2 weeks. I don't know. I have it all written down somewhere, or I have records of when I was there at the hospital. I'm going to guess it was about a week and a half later. But the doctor there looked at my arm. He lanced the spot on my elbow. And I asked him, you know, if there was any way that they could admit me there in the hospital. And he's like, no. And he's like, why do you want to be admitted? I said, so I can get some decent medical attention. Maybe I can get back on my HIV meds, you know. He's like, well, you'll get your meds. Don't worry, you know. And he treated my arm, wrote me two prescriptions, and one for a mild pain reliever and one for an antibiotic to treat my arm and to treat the infection. And I asked him, you know, is there any way that you can give me this medication now so I can take it back with you? And he's like, no. He said, they'll give it to you down there. You know, trust me, I guarantee you'll get your medicine down there. And I wish I could see this doctor now so I could let him know. No, I never did get my medicine that they promised me, you know. So they did treat my arm and wound up getting taken back to Bossier Parish again. Never did get the medication that he had written the prescriptions for me. I saw the deputy bring the prescriptions back in to the jail. I saw him give them to the people there at the desk, but I never did get my medication. I know that was on a Sunday. Monday or Tuesday, something started going on with my ear. I tried to clean it out with a homemade Q-tip. And all of a sudden, it's like my ear felt like it was just being stopped up. Obviously, I had gotten it infected during the evacuation. That Monday, I got so sick that my equilibrium was shot. I couldn't even stand up straight. I kept stumbling around like I was drunk. That Monday night, I ate my food that they served and could barely get it down. And then Monday, my cellmate's trying to tell him out the door, hey, he's sick, he needs some attention. Monday night, sometimes not long after dinner, I laid down trying to feel better, and all of a sudden I started throwing up all over my cell floor. And he's screaming out the cell door, hey, something's seriously wrong. Y'all need to come see what's wrong with this guy. Nobody ever came. Actually, one of the guys did come up there. He came in with about four or five of his other deputies. And these were the same guys that were beating the people. Came in.
Did you say beating people?
Beating people, yeah. They would... For some reason, they were beating guys. I never did figure out exactly why. Any little reason that they would piss them off. They would get a group of four or five guys, and they would go in a cell. They would take... And I kept trying to figure out who or why they were beating these people. And I never did actually see it, but you heard it. and basically, I kept trying to figure out why these people were being beat. What are they doing? I wanted to make sure I didn't do what they were doing because I didn't want to be beat. And then I figured out it was because they were black, mainly. I never saw or heard of anyone getting hurt or beat unless they were black. one guy in particular told me that they came at one time and made us give them all our shoes because we still had on our original shoes from the evacuation. And this guy got a little upset because he had to give up his shoes. They put him in his cell, put him up against the wall, spread eagle, arms and up against the wall, facing the wall. And this one deputy in particular would uppercut these guys as hard as he could. Big, huge, stocky guy. And he would uppercut these guys and hit them underneath their ribs and crack their ribs, break their ribs for no reason. You know, basically a person that had issues in his own life and was taking it out on some of these guys, you know. When I went finally, and these are the same guys that come running in my cell when my cellmate told them, hey, he's sick, he needs some attention. And I think that they thought I was full of crap. I think that they came in there ready to beat me until they saw the throw up or the puke laying all over the floor. I think that that's plus the fact of I made it obvious that I was HIV positive. And I use that in my defense at times because they were so uneducated about it. And I think they were scared to touch me or to do anything because they knew, you know, they were so uneducated about HIV. I guess they thought that they could catch it from striking me or hitting me. But they came in and they realized that I was really sick. And so they went to, and they said, we'll tell medical. And that's all they would ever say. We'll let medical know. You know, but nobody ever came. So finally, the next day, my cellmate was gay, extremely flamboyant. So they had brought in guards from Rikers Island to help out with the situation there because they were so shorthanded in this jail. First of all, I don't feel like we should have ever been taken to this jail if they weren't fully open and fully prepared to operate. This jail should have never been opened, I think they said, until October the 1st or November the 1st. So they, I don't understand why they took us to this facility in the first place. But we were actually glad when we saw these guards from Rikers Island come in because when they came in, we actually started getting better food, better treatment, because of the multiracial people that were there. Instead of, as far as Bossier Parish, the whole time I was there, I only saw one black employee the whole time I was there. So obviously, they weren't going to be treating us the same with all these guys from Rikers Island there because, a lot of these guys are black or Hispanic or from, other racial backgrounds. But that next day, after I had thrown up all over my cell floor, my roommate or my cellmate, there were some black ladies, some black guards from Rikers Island, ladies that... And they were cutting up, with him because of his flamboyancy, and they were talking about the Beyonce bounce and all this silly mess. And so that's how he got their attention to get them up there to look in the cell door and see me laying there, my throw up still on the floor from the night before. And apparently that's how that, one of the guards came up there and she looked in the door and she said, baby, you okay? And I'm like, no, I'm sick. And she's like, well, you just hold on. She did not call anybody. She came and got me. She went downstairs, called medical and told them she was bringing me. She didn't ask me if she could bring me. She told them. She came back up there, she got me, and she escorted me personally down to the medical unit. Got to the medical unit. And they threw me in a little cell there, which apparently was supposed to be for hospital beds and such. The hospital beds weren't there yet, so they just threw me in there on the floor and said, wait right here. I threw up while I was in there. And then the nurse that was there then, a male nurse, told me, you know, raised hell at me about throwing up on his clean floor. You know, and I'm so sick I can't even make it to the toilet to throw up. I saw a doctor that day, and he gave me, is it?
I'm listening to you. If you fiddle with the mic, it makes a little bit of a sound.
Okay.
But yeah, unbelievable.
There was a doctor there. He looked at my arm. I told him about my ear. You know, I told him I couldn't hear anything out of my ear, and how it was, how it was hurting and everything, and felt like it was stopped up and everything. They had the little contraption that you use to look in the ear with, but no batteries for it. So he said he couldn't look in my ear. There was nothing he could do about my ear. I'm still deaf today in my right ear because of this. They did give me an antibiotic for my arm, which is not the one that the doctor had prescribed me. When I said something to him about, you know, the doctor at LSU had told me, that was on a Sunday, he had scheduled me for a follow-up visit that Tuesday, which meant they should have transported me back to LSU that Tuesday. And so this was that Tuesday, and I said something to that doctor about it, you know, that I should be, I said, I'm supposed to be going back for a follow-up visit. He said, well, we don't do a follow-up visit. This is your follow-up visit. So, I mean, you know, it's just the coldness and the cruelty, you know. Anyway, they did give me medication that day for my elbow, which did clear up the infection or start to clear up the infection. But it was just a nightmare being there, hearing these people being beat for no reason. The medical attention, you know, I just don't feel like that this so-called nurse should have even been there. Jennifer is all I know. You know, I don't know her last name or anything. But anyway, I was there until October the 4th. And then 3 or 4 days before I was released, for some reason, they came into our pod and they started calling people out and transferring people to other facilities, I guess. I mean, this is when we lost contact with the other people that I was in there with. A lot of these people, I guess, are still in jail. I've tried to call a bunch of them, tried to get in touch with their families, and they still have, so a lot of the families still haven't heard from them, so they still don't know if they're in jail or where they're at, where they're held. But I know right before, about 2-3 days before I got released, they came in and they got us all out, and or they called everybody out except for, I think it was 10 or 11 of us. So it was 11 of us that were held in this one area that's supposed to hold 64 people, 68 people. Let's see, 64, yeah. The rest of us, they took and put us in the maximum security ward or maximum security pod, which was total lockdown for some reason. And they took me and my cellmate and put us in this one little area that was just total lockdown, which is where the crazy criminals were. I mean, the ones that were just raising hell. We were in there for 2 days. Then they moved me back into an area with where they were bringing in people from Lake Charles. Then they were mixing us with felons, federal inmates. Right there at the very end, it was a big mix of people from Orleans Parish, Lake Charles, and a lot of federal inmates. Why they put us in there with those people, I don't know. And then on October the 4th, about 1 o'clock in the morning, they came to the cell door and told me it was time to go. Finally, they didn't tell me why, they didn't tell me anything else other than, you know, you're going back to Orleans. So they took myself and three other guys, put us on a van, drove us back to Orleans Parish to the old bus station. Didn't say, you know, didn't give me any kind of paperwork, no release paperwork, no charges, nothing. They made us change out of our clothes, gave us some street clothes, and let us go. And just released us here in the city. No explanation, no court date, no charges or anything. So,
do you have any idea how you got released or who?
Don't know why I got released. Don't know. I know that at one point during my incarceration in Bossier Parish, there had been a bunch of volunteer attorneys that had came in and sat down and recorded our charges. But they, you know, I never, you know, it said that they would put us on a list of priorities. Maybe I was released because I'm HIV positive. Maybe, you know, they didn't want to deal with that. I have no idea. I do know that I feel like that we should have been released a lot sooner than we were, because within 2 or 3 days after we had been in Bossier Parish, they know that somebody had went back into the Orleans Parish facility here and got computer records or something, because they identified us within 3 or 4 days after being there, because they had a copy of our rap sheet and they had a picture of us. So they knew what our charges were. They knew that I was not a felon. They knew that it was a misdemeanor. So I mean, I can't understand why we were being held so long after we were identified. I don't know if it was a thing of trying to make money for the prison system. You know, the longer they held us there every day, you know, maybe they got a little bit of money for, you know, each prisoner being there each day or whatever. But I just can't comprehend why that we were held there that long after we were identified. You know, that's my question. Why didn't they let us go when they knew who we were? You know, why hold us there? Why are some of these people still being held there? You know, a lot of them that are in worse medical condition than I am. I never did get my HIV meds there. I was taken to Shreveport to, they drew blood, and then 2 weeks later they came back and took me back again. The first time they said they had to draw blood to confirm that I was HIV positive. You know, the next week they came and got me to draw blood to find out what my status were. The whole time I'm telling these people, this is what my status is, I know where I'm at, and I know what meds I take. I can't comprehend why they just couldn't give me my medications and let me start taking them again. Right before the hurricane, I had my blood work done in New Orleans at the Hop Clinic, and I have a copy of this paper where my T cells were over 1,000. I believe they were like 1,050. When I got released on October the 4th, I think it was October the 5th or the 6th, immediately afterwards, I went back to Mississippi, went to my old doctor there. She did blood work. My T-cells had dropped all the way down to a little bit over 300. So I immediately jumped back on my medication. I've been taking my medication since then. I had my blood work done this past Friday at the Hop Clinic here in New Orleans. I got news day before yesterday or yesterday that my T cells have dropped down to 136, which now means I have full-blown AIDS because of this crap that I've been through, because of lack of medication. So now I'm going to have to try to start on a new regimen. I'm going to have to try to start on a new cocktail. I'm going to have to go through the side effects of dealing with a new medication that hopefully will work. Right now I'm scared because I don't know what my health is. I'm doing my best just to stay healthy now. I'm doing my best to stay not at risk. I'm no risk taking it. You know, I'm trying to stay out of the cold. I'm trying to stay away from the mold. I'm trying to stay healthy right now until I can get back on my meds, trying to stay at a no-risk situation until I can get started back on my meds, and hopefully my T-cells will rise again. So.
Did you ever get your AIDS medication, your HIV medication?
I never, I did get just a few of my HIV meds the first 2 days I was in jail in Orleans Parish. Bossier Parish, I never received any of my HIV meds, no.
So you received meds for 2 days before the storm, and they weren't the right amount, is that what you said?
Correct. I received, I take, at the time I was taking Viracept, Combivir, and Neurontin. They gave me more than enough Neurontin, which is basically, it's not even an HIV med. It's a med that is, I take to counteract one of the side effects from the HIV meds. But no, I didn't. I got enough HIV meds for maybe 2 days, for that Saturday and that Sunday. And not enough, you know, for anything, any period longer than that. So.
So you basically went for 5 weeks without medicine?
I went for 40 days without my HIV meds. 40 days.
After having an infection and walking through toxic flood water,
right,
and having an ear infection,
right,
it went neglected.
Right. So.
Do you have anything that you would like to say to anybody about this situation, about your opinion about...
My opinion is I think... what happened to New Orleans, I think everything happens for a reason. I think that what happened in Orleans Parish, do you know the name Katrina means the cleansing? It means purity. It means virginal. I think that it happened, I think Hurricane Katrina happened overall because I think Orleans Parish needed a cleansing. I hope that the system, the Orleans Parish prison system, will be totally different than what it was, because it was totally corrupt. You know, when your wallet gets stolen within 30 minutes of being put in jail, something's not right, you know. I hope that Bossier Parish will get some real medical help there. This so-called nurse that was there, she definitely needs the help. I know that I'm going to do everything possible to get her nurse's license taken from her. I know that when you watch a nurse out of your cell window, out back smoking cigarettes and passing out pills to other guards, I think that something needs to be done about her. I don't think that she needs to be nowhere near any kind of medical facility, because she is definitely not a nurse. Maybe she worked there because she got rejected from all the other hospitals and clinics, and that's the only place she could get a job. But I will definitely see about doing everything I can to get her nursing license yanked. You know, I think that there needs to be some kind of watchdog group that can go into a prison facility at any time and talk to people that are with medical conditions and ask them, you know, are you being treated properly? Are you getting your medications properly? I think that definitely something needs to be done about that, or there needs to be a group that can do that.
So when you say cleansing, it sounds like you're talking about cleaning up the system.
Right, right. I think that the system definitely needs to be cleaned up. Especially in Orleans Parish, you know, when they arrest people for no reason, you know, I'm not really necessarily complaining about my bogus arrest. You know, I can understand how they made a mistake. I can halfway understand that. But so many of the people that were there in that jail were there for public drunk. A lot of the people that were there should have been released long before the hurricane even struck, you know. I think that, you know, bottom line, we should have been evacuated long before the hurricane struck. That's, you know, that's the main issue here. If they had done what they were supposed to have done and evacuated us before the hurricane struck, none of this would have ever happened to me. Or if they had, you know, I heard rumor that they had let a lot of the misdemeanors go, you know, right after the hurricane. Why was I still stuck in there? Because my case was pending or, you know, whatever. I just don't think that I should have been put through what I was put through, you know. Bottom line, there was no reason that I should have been subjected to the things that I was. You know, I think that I should have been released a long time before 40 days, you know. I think that I should have been given my HIV meds when I'm sitting there telling them what kind I need. You know, I think that they should have gotten people from the with medical conditions, not only HIV. There were people there with cancer. There were people there that were diabetic. I think that they should have put all those people in a separate unit and taken care of their medical needs, you know, a lot sooner than they did.